Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next, a dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. Today, a discussion about Hispanic Heritage Month, September 15th through October 15th. Very pleased to have with us Denora Baines of the Hispanic Heritage Council of Western New York. Hi, Denora.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to have you, as a matter of fact. And you know, we're going to start you off with a tough question right off the bat. Why is Hispanic Heritage Month September 15th through October 15th?
Well, thank you for asking a great question, because a lot of people do wonder why.
Absolutely.
So it's September 15th, that is when Mexico declared their independence from Spain. And then following that, a lot of other Central American countries started to declare their independence as well.
Ah, okay. Very good. So that's a great time to start.
Yes. And it actually started off as, I believe, 1 week.
Okay.
And then I believe maybe under Reagan, and then it was expanded to an entire month.
Oh, wow. And it's interesting, though. I glanced at the calendar. You have it handy of what the council is planning or has been running throughout
yes.
this month. Plenty of events. It doesn't seem like you're running out of things to do.
Oh, no. It's been a busy month ever since. We actually started before September 15th.
That's right. Yeah, there were things
weekend.
Going on before that. Yeah.
Yep. And then we have tons more coming up even after October 15th, just because of scheduling and stuff. So we even have all the way up to maybe October 19th, some Hispanic Heritage Month events.
So what about that? I mean, I know you were talking about this before. They were, when you were back in college, they got you on the board at the council,
yes.
and they're not letting you go. And apparently because, you know, the things are really happening there. What about that? Do you find, you know, compare now the time that you've been on the board, just a general enthusiasm and maybe energy behind things?
It has grown. Actually, the other day I was looking at an old Hispanic Heritage Month calendar from years ago that we did, and there was maybe a handful, like six events. It all fit nicely into an 8x11, you know, big font. And then now it is tons, maybe over 20 events. And we still have, we were having people, well, can we collaborate? Can we add the event to your calendar? And even people now, well, next year we should expand it. They see what happens. They see how the event goes and how excited the community is about it, that they then are now starting to think about, well, what else can we do next year? What can we do that will run the entire month? And it's also has shown how well the Hispanic Heritage Council is in collaborating with other organizations, other arts and cultural organizations, other companies, just collaborating with everybody. From day one, we had a Shays Performing Arts Center. We have the Buffalo and Erie County Library that we've done stuff with. We have
the NFTA, I think, to raise the flag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then the Darwin Martin House, and even WNED and WBFO.
Right.
So it's just, that's just goes to show just how excited the community is to celebrate Hispanic culture and how it can just touch everybody, and everybody can learn from it, and they can get the little pieces that they enjoy, whether it's the food, the dancing, the art, or even the language.
What about, you grew up for the most part here in Buffalo, so you have some perspective.
Yes.
I mean, can you compare maybe like mm-hmm. what it was like when you were younger, mm-hmm. you know, growing up Hispanic in Buffalo as compared to like we were talking about. Everybody wants to be a part of it now.
Yes. When I grew up in Buffalo, the Hispanic community is very close-knit.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up on the west side of Buffalo, and my first language was Spanish. And some people tend to be surprised, like, first language is Spanish, but weren't you born here? But when your neighbors speak Spanish, when the local Chinese restaurant, they speak Spanish. You go to the grocery store, they're speaking Spanish. There's always somebody that speaks Spanish. And I even went to a bilingual school. So I didn't have to learn English first. And of course, at home. But of course, I then speak English. I actually speak primarily English now.
Okay.
Just with a little accent. but it was, you know, I would say it's still strong. The Hispanic community, we're still, we may not be the largest, but we definitely are loud. You know, we'll make sure we get our voices heard, especially like with people like Kaz, who are advocates for the community. But when it comes to acceptance from others, I think that has also improved, especially in the work environment. Just understanding that how diverse the Hispanic culture is. And, you know, I remember growing up and there's always this like people always think, oh, well, Mexican is everybody. Everybody's Mexican. Mm. And as a Puerto Rican, while we speak the same language and we're very different, as in even the spices that we tend to use, the types of food that we cook, even the dialect, the Spanish dialect is different. But we both appreciate each other. But yeah, it's just educating people. And that is what the Hispanic Heritage Council is continuing to do. And I think they're doing a good job.
Well, it almost certainly seems to be. I mean, mm-hmm. like you said, the month, I mean, I'm seeing, you know, press releases coming yes. in almost on a daily basis about different events that are going on yeah. around the area, for
and
sure.
And there's a little bit of everything for everybody. Like, it's not just come here to dance and have some food. You know, there's
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. There's always some of that in all the events,
okay,
but it's
good,
not
good
the focus
okay.
of all of the events. So we have a little bit we've had things for families to bring your kids, tons of free events, because that is what we want to do. We want arts and culture to be accessible to everyone. So we really try to focus on creating free events. And now coming up for the second half of Hispanic Heritage Month, or like the end part of Hispanic Heritage Month, we will, there's the Puerto Rican Hispanic Day Parade is actually having an event at the AKG.
Okay.
That is also a free event. So that's a Hispanic Heritage Month celebration.
Free entry into the
yes.
AKG.
Yes.
Ah, very nice.
For the celebration.
For the celebration.
Yeah, but I think it is on a free Friday.
Okay. Ah, very nice.
Yes. Well, I think that was
very strategic.
Yes. we also have even Hamburg. So talking about
yeah.
just how other people are starting to want to celebrate, the town of Hamburg actually reached out to us because they want to do a Hispanic Heritage Month celebration.
Oh.
So they're actually having their own celebration, and we help bring some vendors and performers to assist them with that, so that the next year they can continue doing it. And hopefully other cities and towns will be reaching out to have their own celebrations as well.
Yeah. So your mom moved here when you were just a very, very young child.
Yes.
Your mother's story is remarkable.
Yes, yeah. She came from Puerto Rico to Atlantic City because, you know, you always go places where there's family. So she went there because she had family. And then that's where my older brother, my older sister, and I was born.
Okay.
So we're from Atlantic City, New Jersey. And then I was around 2 years old, and she moved to Buffalo because of another family. At that time, we had family. Now it's just us.
All right.
So at the time we had family, she moved, and she decided to stay here. She was a single mother with four children, and she felt that Buffalo had provided her the supports that she needed as a single mother more than the other areas that she lived in. And I know this because I had asked her, why would you come to cold Buffalo with all the snow? Because I get asked that all the time.
I'm sure
and
you
as
do.
A little girl, I was like, why would you come here?
Yeah.
But she said, yeah, it provided her the supports that she needed as a single mother. And she was able to go to EOC and get her certificates and then continue to grow in her career. And that's when she ended up working for the Buffalo Board of Education. And then now I then asked her, well, why do you do so much for the community? Because she volunteers a lot. She's always doing something for the community. And she said, because I want to give back to the community that helped me so much as a single parent. And that's why, you know, now I'm
You're on every
volunteering
board,
every board. Yeah.
You know, and just one other question about Puerto Rico. Your mom was from there. You were born in Atlantic City. Have you been to Puerto Rico?
Yes.
What? Tell me about Puerto Rico.
So my family's from Ponce, Puerto Rico. But my father's side is from Vega Baja. But I spend most of my time when I go to Ponce, Puerto Rico. And my grandmother had a house. There's a lot of mountains. And I remember the bright blue house. It was in the islands, they tend to use these bright colors.
Okay.
So it was a beautiful, bright blue house that you, of course, would not see here in Buffalo. And it was at the tip of the hill by itself. There was no other house around it besides El Barrio, which is like the projects.
Okay.
That I also had family right. She was like right on the outside of that.
Yeah.
And then she had chickens.
Oh
so
my.
It felt, while I wasn't born in Puerto Rico, it still feels like home, because you go there and then you see like, oh, okay, this is why we do certain things. This is where the recipes come from, or the specific words that you use in Spanish, or just a lot of things that are passed down to the next generation. And it's good to see, like, my grandmother. I got to meet my grandfather before he passed. And you see your family and you see where you come from. It feels good. It's a good home feeling, and you feel proud. And then I get to freshen up on my Spanish.
Yeah, does it take a little time to catch up?
It does.
Yeah.
So I'll get there, and they all speak Spanish. And I think by like day two, day three, then it's just my brain does the switch.
Okay.
And then now, okay, I can easily speak in Spanish. And yeah, so it's wonderful to go back and refresh, re-energize.
Nice, very nice. And a little bit of that warm island weather isn't bad either, right?
Oh my goodness. I have eczema and the cold weather in Buffalo. And then I also, I told my mom I wasn't meant to be in Buffalo because I also have Raynaud's. So when I touch anything cold, my fingers, blood leaves my fingers.
Oh.
And I'm like, Ma, I can't. But that's my excuse. I don't have to go out and shovel.
I wish I had that one for my father when I was a kid. We're talking with Denora Baines today from the about Hispanic Heritage Month. She's with the Hispanic Heritage Council of Western New York. 70,000 people in Western New York are call themselves Latino or identify as Latino.
Yes, Latino or Hispanic.
Okay.
Because there are some who identify as Latino but not Hispanic.
Okay.
All right. But yes, so, and it's growing, actually. With migration and jobs and people just wanting a better life for themselves, or families saying, hey, come to Buffalo. There's a nice, large Hispanic community.
Sure.
So it's growing. Even the Spanish language, it's the second most spoken language in the United States. We're the fastest growing demographic in the United States. And so that just goes to show how important it is to continue to celebrate the Hispanic culture, to continue to collect the history, increase awareness, because we're here. We're here to stay, and we're inviting our families to come as well. But the beauty about Hispanic culture is just how diverse it is.
Right.
And just how I've said this a million times, it's a little bit of everything for everybody.
Nice. Very nice. So back to a little bit of everything. I know you have a lot of events coming up here. I just want to maybe touch upon a couple of them because it might be a chance, like you said, Hispanic heritage is here to stay. It's not history, and it's an opportunity perhaps for people to branch out and experience some things that they haven't had a chance to do so before.
Absolutely. So just as I mentioned earlier with that event at the AKG, that's something great for families.
Is that Friday? This Friday?
Friday at 3 p.m. at the AKG. But if you're more interested in something more of a panel discussion, something more of a heavier topic, we have the Venezuela in Political Crisis panel.
Wow.
At the Buffalo History Museum on October 12th. And that is also a free event.
Wow.
So we will
That's
have,
a powerful
yes,
topic. Wow.
Yes. So we have some panelists coming, experts in that we're able to talk about that. We will also have some performances. Like we said, there's a little bit of dance in all the events, performances and some food.
All right. So how about for you, food? If you're going to one of these events, what do you like?
I like pastelillos, of course. They're easy to eat. I like carne frita. So carne frita is just fried meat.
Okay.
Usually it's like a pork shoulder you cut up. Tostones, which is the plantains that are fried.
I like those.
But I also like to try other foods that are from other Latin American countries.
Okay.
And but I myself, I cook well. I enjoy cooking.
All right.
I know how to cook a lot of Puerto Rican dishes, but I don't cook it often.
Oh, okay. You're a little too busy.
I like to try different recipes, but I like to try Indian food, and I like to cook maybe Korean food. And I'll go in and I'll do the research. Well, what spices are they using? Where can I find these spices?
Wow.
Just because I like to learn, just as much as I encourage people to learn about our culture, I like to do the same thing when it comes to other cultures. But there's nothing like just making your homemade sofrito and making a fresh batch of arroz con gandules. And it tastes so good with the fresh sofrito. And it's just like, all right, well, this is comforting. This is my soul food, my comfort food.
Well, the way you say it, you make it sound really good. I'm not going to lie to you. Hey, so do you have a favorite event of these months, of the
oh,
month? Is there something, something that's caught you over the years that do you find to be particularly appealing?
Yes, so last year we had a cuatro, which is an instrument, a guitar instrument, a Puerto Rican guitar instrument. We had also at the Buffalo History Museum a performance, and she came. This is a specific artist that came to Buffalo. Fabiola Mendez.
Okay.
Emmy nominated, and she came here to Buffalo, and it was, people loved the performance. And now she's on NPR.
Oh.
She had a Tiny Desk performance that I just saw yesterday. And I was like, oh, well, now millions of people will be able to enjoy this music. And we could say she came here to Buffalo.
Right.
And educated people about this instrument and performed.
Yeah, the one thing we know about Buffalo, we love when our connections to the big time are there.
Yes.
We like to highlight those for sure.
But it is so hard to choose one because there's so many. Like at the Science Museum, we actually do a cooking demonstration every year. So that's nice. We have, and even this Venezuela political crisis that's coming up, that is something that I'm very interested in.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's a big topic.
I mean,
we probably should have someone come in here and talk about that. Yeah, that'd be great. We also have to mention, of course, that the Hispanic Heritage Council of Western New York is setting up its own institute. It's under construction right now.
Yes, it is. And we've already started to build our foundation. We recently got a grant from Bank of America for staff.
Oh, okay.
So we've been raising funds to hire staff. And this grant will help support two staff members. And the staff members would then help us expand all this programming that we're having during the month, during this month. We want to expand this and be able to be ready to up and running when the Institute opens, to have the programs already developed, to have the funding for the programs. The staff member will also help with administrative support and operations. There's a lot that the staff member will help, because right now the council, we're just all volunteers. And I know all boards are volunteers,
right. But
they're a volunteer board supporting a staff.
Right, right.
And whatever events the board decides they want to do, the board also has to volunteer.
Have to go do it.
And go do it for these
Sell
events.
The idea, you've bought the idea.
But it's going, you know, we're continuing to raise capital. And we already had the bidding for the steel work. So it's exciting. It's one of a kind in upstate New York, and it's a need. You know, there's a need for this, and this whole month goes to show how big the need and want is, not only just for the Hispanic community, but the Western New York community at large. People want to go and have a place to just have fun and celebrate and listen to some maybe Latin jazz or a place where Black and Brown artists can have their art displayed, even a theater where you can share your own stories. We're going to have a media center so that not just our community, but other communities, Black and Brown communities in Buffalo and Western New York, can create their own content.
Wow. Yeah, you kind of touched on a couple of the things that are going to be part of the Institute,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Theater will be in there?
Yes, a theater, an art gallery, museum. We will be collecting our history, and we will have a multimedia center. So broadcast, podcast, and then we will have the Goda Culinary Arts Kitchen.
Oh.
Yes. So we will be having cooking demonstration and cooking classes and some more programming, and especially teaching the community on how to use local foods and healthy food and to make Latino food, but not just Latino food. We will also want to invite other communities to come and exchange recipes. And we have our grandmothers who have these recipes, and they say, well, a pinch of this and a spoonful of this. And we would hope that the Institute will be a place that we can record these recipes and pass it down to the next generation.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes. And that's just, we also have an event space, and we have the Scott Beeler Learning Labs.
Really?
Yes.
No, so what's that? What's that going to be?
These are several rooms in the Institute that will be reserved for programming.
Okay.
So whether it's after-school programming, workforce development, Spanish and English classes, we want to partner with the Buffalo Public Schools and do programming there, Saturday Academy. So it's going to be a lot going on in the Cultural Institute. But at the same time, because it's important to not only educate, it's important to educate your community and provide them with the tools so that they can sustain themselves, but also have that foundation of the culture. Because I feel like that has an impact on someone's mental health, their identity, where they come from. And I think I hope that the Institute will also be providing that aspect of it.
And target date to open is what?
2026.
2026.
Yes. That has moved. That date has moved from, you know, when we first talked about
sure.
this years ago. We've had COVID, and we've had just the economy and prices of things. And even when it comes to building something this big, it's going to take time. And we want to make sure we're getting the best price for everything. We want to make sure we're doing it the right way. And because we're only going to do this once, and
right.
we're going to do it well. So it has moved, and with the Buffalo winter. And but yeah, target date is 2026.
Wow, that's very exciting. Very exciting for
it
sure.
Is.
So, you know, when it comes to encouraging people to explore Hispanic heritage here, we're talking about, it doesn't really matter whether you're Hispanic or not, but what's your sale to? What's your elevator pitch about why this, what you should come to see and what you will benefit from coming and enjoying these events?
I think exposure to other cultures, other music, other languages. It really opens up your mind to then be able to appreciate others and appreciate people as individuals. And what happens is when people come to these events is they then also start to appreciate their own culture, because you see a group of people so proud to celebrate their culture. Then they start thinking, you know what? Like, I want to do that. I want to do that for my culture. I want to then learn more about the history of my culture or the music that comes from where my family is from. And a lot of times in America, we're a melting pot. And people say, oh, well, where are you from? Oh, well, I'm just from here. No, but really, where are you from?
Right.
And I'm speaking about Anglos. So,
sure.
Like, well, you know, we had family that came from Italy or Poland. And then they starts that conversation. And we talk about that at these events because they're like, oh, wow, this is beautiful. And they start asking us questions. And we ask questions back. And then they start really thinking, well, yeah. You know, I do have a little bit of this and a little bit of Italian. And then they start thinking, well, oh, you know, I should then also connect to my culture. And I think that's what happens when they come to your events. They see how proud we are, and it rubs off on them. And it's just a good time. It's just a good time for everybody. Oh, and then when I, a lot of times we do food samples. And people, when it comes to food, even adults more than children, because children be like, oh, you can easily bribe them into, oh, try this that you've never tried before. Or you say, here, just try this. But adults are like, well, what is it? What's the flavor? I don't know. I say, look, because this is what I would say. I say to my nieces, if you don't like it, you could just spit it out, throw it away. You're not going to hurt my feelings. But just try it. You know, today's the day to try something new. And it's not going to hurt. Just spit it out.
I will not do that. I will not spit out the food. Trust me, especially if it's free. Hey, and just finally, so if somebody wants more information on what's still to come for Hispanic Heritage Month, what's the best place to go?
Visit our website at HispanicHeritageWNY.org. We have an icon of Hispanic Heritage Month, our calendar. Click on it. You'll see all the calendar events there. Follow us on social media. And yeah, that's where you could get all the information.
Donora Baines, great conversation. I really appreciate that. And hopefully, you know, we can talk some more down the road. This is great. Yeah,
Thank you again for having me.
Donora Baines is with the Hispanic Heritage Council of Western New York. Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Hi there. Thank you for listening to WBFO, your NPR station. It is our annual membership pledge drive right now, and we're taking an important moment to ask you to become a sustaining member of Buffalo Toronto Public Media, your community radio news station. Being a sustainer means that you are a crucial, ongoing, monthly contributing member of our family. Donate online now at WBFO.org or call 1-877-456-8870.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. For the remainder of our program, we're going to be talking about the Buffalo Prenatal Network. With us, we have Mykia Gibson, one of the community health workers and supervisor at the Prenatal Network. Mykia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also, we have Valerie Cruz with us as well. Valerie, nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Gracias.
Yes. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we found Valerie is because it is Hispanic Heritage Month. And Valerie from Puerto Rico, right?
Yes, I am from Puerto Rico. Yeah. Se iba a Puerto Rico.
And moved here not too long ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago. All right. Buffalo.
We got to what brings somebody from beautiful, warm Puerto Rico to Buffalo? You probably ask yourself that a lot, don't you?
Yep. After the Hurricane Maria, I used to work a program. It was called Housing in Action in English, the translation.
What is it in Spanish?
Vivienda en Acción.
Sounds better that way.
And I used to work at a dealership and after the Hurricane Maria, so I didn't have, you know, the work ended and everything was a struggle. I have some personal issues. So I feel like it was time to me to explore. So I moved, you know, here and it's been great so far.
Well, we're glad to have you. And you guys do important work. Let's talk about this. I think is a great way to talk about this. A typical day. I asked you about this before we went on there. What's a typical day? And you both kind of looked at each other. There are no typical days for us. How did today start? Tell me about today.
Today started with a phone call of needing to kind of intervene with a worker, another coworker, to kind of advocate a little harder or firmer for a client just to get some things in order so we can have suitable housing.
So these are one of the many issues that you are dealing with the people that you're trying to help.
Yep, housing, I think, is one of the biggest ones. We have a lot of clients that are, you know, it does affordable housing. Because there are beautiful apartments in Buffalo, let me tell you that. Mm. But I can't even afford it. And I work full time. So I think affordable housing is what we need. And, you know, I think that's one. And the other one is, you know, the necessity foods and other social
emotional needs. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Typical age of the people that you're working with?
Childbearing.
Mm-hmm. So it could be any age from a young teenager to somebody, obviously not a young teenager, right?
Yeah, you name it, I've seen it.
Really? How, if you don't mind sharing, how young?
13.
13-year-old.
My youngest, and I think 64 has been my oldest.
64.
Through my 10-year, yeah.
Your client, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's it like? Let's talk about the teenagers for a little bit, because obviously that's a concern. What do you see when you go to a teenager? They're pregnant. Just kind of talk about how you go about getting to know them, understanding their situation. How does that go?
Yeah, I think the youngest that I have, you know, the opportunity to work with was 16.
Okay.
And I think was her mother. That, you know, the social worker at school talked to the mother about our program. So we kind of enroll her to give her more information, you know, what it's going to be, because her life is going to change and how it's going to be. Just take care of the baby, make sure that she go to the prenatal appointment and make sure that she have everything before she have the baby. So I think in that moment with teenagers is more like educational. Because they don't, you know, even though no one have the knowledge to become a parent.
Right.
But sometimes, and it makes funny because sometimes people say, I'm pregnant, what's next? You know, what is coming? So I think that was my experience with one. But I think Mikey, I have more experience with younger.
Yeah. I think when we find them, a lot of times it's through the school social worker when they're young, the Say Yes program, you know, reaches out to us a lot in that aspect as well. But I think what I see is a lot of like instability in their home life. And that's not, you know, standard across the board.
Sure.
But sometimes that is what I've been seeing the most. And they just kind of need some outside support that's different from the voice that's in their household. And I like to say there's special people that can work with the younger population, because you don't want to push your views on them, but you want them to be, you know, supported to come to the ideas of being a parent and figuring things out on their own. So I think that's the good thing that our program, which is the best, provides.
I like the way you said that.
I meant that.
Yes, I could tell.
that provides that support for a younger mom, as well as, you know, at any age.
Well, you bring up a lot of things when you say that, and let's talk about some of those things that are offered through the Buffalo Prenatal Network, the different types of services. Once you said that, I'm like, wow, that's right. There are a lot of things here, and especially, again, perhaps maybe somebody who's younger, that doesn't have the means of their own to perhaps help bring a child into the world. So let's talk about some of the different services that are available.
So Buffalo Prenatal Perinatal Network, we have like four programs. So we have the Community Health Worker Program, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Fatherhood Initiative, that is a program to help fathers, you know, to move forward. They have mentoring. They work more with nurturing fathers. They give them classes. My favorite so far, it was the one that do an activity that can do hair.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because I have girls.
Okay.
So I love that one. They have somebody that helped them how to do like hairstyles and stuff. So I think that was kind of cool and make time to bonding with, you know, the child and the father. We have the Healthy Home Buffalo Home Visiting Program that is run by Healthy Families of New York. That one, Mikey, you can talk a little bit more about that one.
Yeah, so Buffalo Home Visiting Program is another, like our sister program. They focus more on parenting and keeping down child abuse, and in addition to the services that we offer, like maintaining health care. So I like to say we focus mainly on the health care and stability, and home visiting focuses more on healthy parenting and stability.
When you said about child abuse, I mean, I'm wondering again, these young mothers, are they occasionally, do we know, victims of child abuse, or is that not something you necessarily identify?
Well, we do identify it. We actually just won a grant from a program that we partnered with UB in reference to Survivor Moms Companion. And it basically is an education, a trauma-informed education for pregnant and postpartum moms. And they kind of just learn how to process some of that underlying trauma that they went through prior to being 18. We've had some very successful cases when we've done it in the past, and they a couple of them have even become our interns that work
really
in our program now. So, it's successful. Sometimes you run into things like that. And with the relationship with their assigned worker, you can kind of like unpack those things and support them through that.
So there are a lot of, I guess the first thing to note, there's a lot of services available. Is that a big part of of the issue? People just don't know that there's services mm-hmm. like that?
Yeah. And we also have the Go Buffalo Mom program.
Okay.
And that is held with transportation. So if you are you have Medicaid, I think they can help you, depending on the situation, they can help you with rides, taxis,
mm-hmm.
or bus passes to go to your appointment. So we always try to link our clients with that program as well, so they can go to the prenatals, and there's no excuse. No excuse. So you can have a taxi, you can have a bus pass. Sometimes, me, that I speak Spanish, we see more that they need the ride, but also an advocate. So we go with them, so we can say, hey, she need a translation. And sometimes here in Buffalo, I can say that they're very good. Almost every place has translation, but sometimes they don't. So we accompany them, and we can do that for them as well, too.
It's interesting when it comes to accomplishing anything, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, there's nothing like, you know, delivering a baby. I mean, probably the greatest accomplishment that humans do, right? But at the same time, when you're looking down the road and you don't know, the smallest things can get in the way. And it's got to be very difficult for some of these young mothers, like you said, how am I going to get there? Are those things that you're hearing from people? Like they're almost, when you meet them at first, I can't do this, I can't do that. Is that kind of something that you have to go through?
Yes, definitely. I think the majority of the time, if they're, like for me, I think I see it more just because of the population that I work with. You know, they're just came here, so they don't even know where is the closest supermarket or where they can go and get help, because sometimes, well, depending, if they're refugees, probably they give them a little bit more information. If they just came, they don't know.
And we're talking about Spanish speaking?
Spanish. But even though I feel like it can be either way with the other clients as well.
Yeah, I think even if you were born and raised here in Buffalo, sometimes like you stay on your side of town or your area, your neighborhood, And then when you need to explore, like increase your boundaries or your borders or where you can go, you still need that kind of help navigating. If the grocery store that I need to go to is, you know, on the east side and I live on the west side, I sometimes still need to be able to connect that. Like, everybody don't know that Main Street goes from east to, you know what I mean? So
right,
it's just right. Like sometimes.
Right. Your boundaries you're kind of limited in your own imagination until someone tells you otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned before, especially for the younger women, often there's a referral from a school counselor. What about other referrals? How do other women find their way into the Buffalo Prenatal Network?
Yeah, we have tons of referrals that we get from Department of Social Services, Child Protective Services, the clinics that we partner with for prenatal and pediatric care. Last week, Friday, the team did door-to-door outreach where we go and literally knock on the doors. Hey, is there anyone pregnant in the house? Hey, is there anyone that needs health insurance or WIC? Any small children? Do you need food? We'll pick, you know, a couple streets and we'll go as a team and we'll do.
Are they kind of targeted? The idea that you kind of know that maybe this part of the.
Yeah, so our New York State grant has certain zip codes that we work within that have like high infant mortality rates, high low birth weights. And our main objective is to have healthy babies, full term babies, and healthy moms so that we don't have to continue to, you know, have high number and high cases of gestational diabetes and hypertension. Those are our, you know, primary objectives. So those are the areas that we go in and try to do that outreach and try to be seen and advocate for the community.
And so Valerie, you will go on these as well? And
not right now
because you are 31 weeks pregnant and stay at 31 weeks pregnant until you're at least out of here.
But I mean,
your Spanish speaking must be very helpful.
But now I think we did outreach, I think, in every, every zip code we try to do that. And then, yes, we have received referral for outside agencies too. I think WIC, sometimes they send us referrals and all the clinics that she already, and Mikey
Hispanic
already mentioned.
Hispanic United.
Oh, Hispanic United too. Sometimes when they have cases that, you know, they need the extra support.
But just to jump back though, I'm interested in this outreach. Mm-hmm. I mean, going right to the door. So what kind of responses are you getting?
It varies. Yeah. Like sometimes if we go to like a older person's house, they're like, no, ain't no babies here. But there was a time when I remember we went and we're doing an outreach on the east side and there was a Hispanic family. The mom was like 6 months pregnant and they were sleeping on the floor.
Hmm.
So we were able to kind of enroll her right there on the spot to kind of help assess her needs and help the family. And several months later, she had a healthy baby. We were able to provide her with a bed from grants and funding that we get outside of our New York State grant. So, I mean, it varies, but that story happened, 4 years ago, and I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, because a great success story.
Absolutely.
And if you didn't knock on the door,
right,
maybe,
what
who knows?
The alternative, right.
Yeah, probably would not have been such a favorable result.
That's why we're the best.
Well, I mean, but it's intriguing though to go to that level of outreach, right? I mean, you know, I guess there's this impression with a lot of groups that, well, maybe you'll table at an event or here's your phone number, here's a billboard to put up somewhere or something like that to reach out, but to actually go to these places. So you do get, that's a great example, but you get other responses as well. Like, oh, I didn't know.
I'll give it to my granddaughter or my niece, you know, because there's still an underlying stigma with pregnancy, especially when you're young, right? You were taught to stay in a house, stay behind closed doors, be very private. So a lot of people don't want to reach out because they're like, oh, Buffalo Prenatal, like, am I supposed to talk to them and let people know that I'm pregnant? But we want to be in our community because we want people to know that they can have support to the services that they need to have a healthy life for themselves and their baby.
I thought you were going to say something there, Valerie.
No, I was just, you know, saying yes. I think that's one. And then another thing, sometimes they hear the name and it's like a big name, Buffalo Prenatal Network.
Yeah.
But all you, if you're enrolled in our program, if you speak Spanish, you're going to have a Spanish-speaking worker. And you're going to have someone that is going to look like you and probably lives in the same community and had the same struggles in the past as well.
Are you going?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's quite all right. We should tell everybody that our guests are Valerie Cruz and also Mykia Gibson, community health workers and supervisors at the Buffalo Prenatal Network. You guys got into a lot of different things because of the type of work you do. You see a lot of the issues that are going on in the city, not just for expectant mothers, but for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about housing a little bit. You see what's going on in Buffalo. Let's, you know, we hear kind of a surface talk about the lack of affordable housing. It sounds like you guys are really seeing what it's like and what it really means to people.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes when the clients, we receive referrals, I think I can say probably of 10 referrals, 8 or 7, they have homelessness or no stable housing.
Insecure, yeah.
So, and we try our best, you know, to fill out applications. Like we sit down with the clients, we fill applications everywhere. I remember when, I think it was Vermont, they opened the Section 8 waiting list. We bring all the clients at our office and we help them. I translate for all the clients that can speak Spanish, and we struggle to get on the waiting list at least. And that's the type of services that, you know, other agencies, I feel like they don't provide. We do so much to try to support them. But I feel like that one is the biggest one, affordable housing. And when they can afford the house, there's a lot of issues that comes. Like they have infestation, high lead.
Yeah.
What else?
You are, just to confirm, I know we talked about this before, you are seeing lead poisoning in some of these scenarios, right?
Yes. We have a coordinator that actually, like, half of her day calling, 211 or 311 to just make these reports, and we're getting inspections and through the Department of Health, and we're just seeing that, you know, the lead levels in the houses, especially on the east and west side of Buffalo, is really high, really high.
And we know that because we, you know, encourage moms to take the babies to the appointment, and we always ask, did the baby get lead tested? How high or how low is their level? And when we see that, so we just make a referral to the housing coordinator, and she follow with them as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's. I appreciate you guys sharing. Please go ahead. Because we talk about these things, and when we talk about them, sometimes there's programs to take care of lead. There's programs to mm-hmm. but until, you know, there are really eyewitness accounts to the real things that are happening person to person, I mean, I don't know if it hits home as hard
right, as
to hear those kinds of stories. And it's got to be, you know, heartbreaking for these young parents that to find out that their child has lead poisoning.
It's absolutely. And then it's even more so overwhelming that when they go for treatment, they really don't know the extent of, you know, the damage the high lead can do until it happens. You know, it's just, it's devastating because you want to navigate a system with parents, and if they're younger and they don't understand, you know, giving them a script for the vitamin and just give your kids these vitamins, and they're not really knowing the extent of the damage. Yeah.
You guys do some important work. Like you said, Mykia, Buffalo Prenatal Network, the best.
Yes.
But, you know, every story is a success story. How do you guys handle that?
We were talking about it earlier. We say we start all over again until there's success.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, at the same time, do you take your work home with you sometimes?
We try not to.
Yeah.
You know, we try to, you know, mental health is a factor for the clients and the workers. You know, we build community. We try to build community for the program participants, and we also take time to build community amongst each other as workers, as staff, because we just know that sometimes you have, like, you carry other people's burdens. So we try to stay level and open and honest as much as we can with each other so that we don't have to take it home with us. I think our supervision time is really key.
Yes, and sometimes I feel like every case is a different case. Mm-hmm. So I know for, you know, one of my workers, that she have a case that it was like too much for her. And at that moment, she's like, hey, I feel like my mental health is being compromised here. Like, I don't know what else to do. I don't feel well. So at that moment, you're like, I understand. Come on, let's work this out. And if you have to take time, you have to take time. So it's okay, too. Like I always said, we are the best, but we are not superheroes. So, and I don't have a magic wand to, you know, help everybody's life. I wish I could.
Right.
But no. But sometimes we have to keep that in mind. Like, there are cases that are, like, extreme compared to others. So, and in that point, you know that we have to sit down and say, hey, let's do a plan for you. For the worker, so she can set up boundaries that she can, you know, little by little, hey, I'm going to help you, but you have to help yourself as well. Because sometimes I feel like they, and I don't know, I think we never talk about this, Maikia, but I think sometimes I feel like for us that we speak Spanish, it's not that it's more work, but it's like more little things. Like if a client receives a letter, she's going to take a picture in that moment. She's going to send it to me. What does that letter say? So all the little things that it happened. Oh, I received this text from this person. What did it say? Can you call this place for me? Like, it's more, you know, little things.
Sure.
They probably, I don't know if with the other communities it happened the same. Probably not translation, but probably something similar. But sometimes that, you feel like you are nonstop working. Mm-hmm. Like, they text me the other day from an optical, and your glasses are ready. I'm like, my glasses are ready? But I didn't do anything. Like, when I call, it was a client that she didn't speak English, so she put me as a contact person for her glasses. So, you know, and I don't mind, but hello, give me the heads up.
Right. And it's also interesting, you guys talk about, you know, how inside the Buffalo Prenatal Network among the workers, there's kind of like these communities and stuff. But the two of you have formed your own kind of bond, which is interesting. You know, you came here, of course, Valerie, you know, just a couple of years ago. You know, Maikia, you're a
born and raised
Buffalonian. It's like me. Yeah, I mean, talk about that bond. I mean, it's an interesting connection.
Let me just say, I think everything starts with the food, though.
Whoa.
I think she loves Hispanic food. So that was the first.
Oh, so you're in it just for the food.
Initially, no, okay. No. But I think, like, I always joke with her that, you know, she was sent here to Buffalo just for me because we speak the same language. Even though she's from Puerto Rico and she speaks Spanish, when we talk to each other, like, from the beginning, we could finish each other's sentences.
Mm.
It was so, like, weird initially, but now it's just, like, a second nature, you know, and I don't know what I'm going to do in a couple weeks when she goes out on maternity leave, but we'll be on maternity leave.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, and I feel like it's, well, first of all, when I met her, I didn't have no friends. So I'm like, ooh, I finally have a friend in Buffalo. I can't say that I have a friend. But it's, you know, more than that. Like, the work that we do sometimes is kind of hard.
Right.
And have somebody though I can vent to. And sometimes I don't know what to do. I'm stuck because I'm not perfect. And sometimes I don't even know what else to do with the clients. So have that, you know, that I can turn my chair around and say, hey, can you help me here? I'm stuck. Or every time that I write something in English, can you read it? It's good. I don't say no mistakes. So it's stuff like that. And I feel like the environment and our work, you know, help us as well to get to that level. Because sometimes, you know, you have these places that they're very strict, that they don't have time. Our agency they provide that space so we can have, you know, lunches together sometimes and spend time together so we know each other a little bit more outside.
And it must help with the work.
The work.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So if somebody needs to know more about the Buffalo Prenatal Network, how do they go about finding out more?
They can visit us at our website, which is www.bppn.
Ooh.
So Buffalo Prenatal Perinatal Network.
Okay.
And then 716-884-6711.
Yeah. All right. Very good. And what will they find when they get there, when they call? What are they going to get?
A community support.
Nice. And if they need someone to speak Spanish?
I'm here. Soy aquí. Well, I don't know. I don't know, so, but right now I'm here.
You may want to turn off your phone when you go on maternity leave. Be getting texts from the optician. To both of you, Valerie and Ikea, thanks so much for talking with us today about obviously a very serious and important service that you guys provide here in the city of Buffalo. But I really appreciate you sharing your experiences. I think it's tremendously helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Our guests, Mikea Gibson, and also Valerie Cruz from the Buffalo Prenatal Network. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.